Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a tale of two computer systems, how I've sort of finally, or I didn't really, it's not a huge battle, but it seemed so it was going to be well won, crack the ability of PHP, which is the native language of the internet, to work with LabVIEW, a robotics language, which has got all this fantastic drag and drop functionality. And so I'll just say what I'm doing at the moment. I'm driving a few errands to get, out of all things, a bicycle helmet, because I've got a friend coming from Victoria who'll bring their bikes, and I've got to get a bicycle helmet, and I've been off my bike and all that type of stuff ever since I've had the heart operation, and there's sort of concerns about falling off and that type of stuff, so I'll keep it slow and stuff like that. So I've rebuilt the bike and stuff like that. Now I'm in the process of getting the Internet of Things to work with LabVIEW. So the Internet of Things is, you can buy pretty low-cost devices which will speak to the Internet, and you can get it to speak to the Internet and pass data to your server, and you can program your server to just collect the data. It seems all pretty simple, and if you do it pretty much like texting, you know, you can send text each time, it'll save it, but it's sort of a very large amount of software, or large amount of data with very much little value to it, so it's very cluttery. So the fastest, the most succinct way of collecting your data is collected as bytes, bits and bytes, as ones and noughts, and as you go away from that, you have to put more and more effort into, as you go into plain English, you have more and more efforts, you know, with pauses, breaks, and, you know, specifications. I'm writing it in English, and, you know, all this huge overhead, and so the way I first approached it is, said, well, I want to focus on getting the entire system working, and I'll work in the most secure way possible. So I began writing into the internet in plain English, and that way I could, you know, write in plain English, this at the device, check the internet at the device, and then check my LabVIEW. Plain English was sort of the lingua franca of there. And bit by bit, I've been migrating it down, compressing the data by a factor of 10. And once you compress the data by a factor of 10, you're laughing. Now, the major thing to do there is, once, if it's in plain English, it really doesn't matter what type it is. It'll just, you know, it'll have an exponential, anything like that, we'll just record it like that. If it's not in plain English, it requires two or three steps. Now, the first step is to select your bit. So I'm having a short 16-bit, so two 8-bit bytes. Yeah, there's a byte, which is 8 bits, and a 16-bit piece of data is 2 bytes of information. And so if you're certain bits of information that you have automatically are too large for that format, and the or are not integers. Now, the problem of not integers is easily solved. You multiply it by a factor of 10, and so a factor of 100, and then divide by a factor of 100. So you make it integer, and then you make it non-integer as you go through. So the best I can, and I'm getting sort of pretty close to on a 100th of degree measurement out of this. And this is pretty much all you will ever want. You don't want a 1,000th of a degree. That's getting almost too ridiculous. So that's the first thing to do, is to shape it such that it can be in digital format. And then I just did a digital sort of mini ecosystem in just totally within LabVIEW on my computer. So LabVIEW would take the data, convert it to unsigned integers. I'm just going to really think about what I have to do here. I'm just trying to think about. I'll leave it. I'm just trying to think about at what point. So there's a whole lot of data management. So in terms of getting through, I've got the LabVIEW to actually take the long form information and then convert it into a bit file, which is sort of like a pure data file, and only internally. So it takes the long English version and creates a shadow file system, which is all converted to digital, the bit format. I'll just be with you in a second here. Beautiful sunny day. It's a bit, absolutely, it is still freezing here in Australia. I can tell you the temperature in my room is getting down to 14 degrees Celsius. That's getting pretty nippy. Okay, I'll be with you in a second. Just hold that space. You're going to sit here in the car. And also, by virtue of podcasting, you're going to experience my next bit in no time whatsoever. So enjoy it. Enjoy the few seconds. It's going to be a second for you. It's going to be a minute or so for me. Back recording again. That wasn't so hard. That's only a few seconds for you. It was a little bit of a break for me. Look, getting back to it. Let's resize what's going on. I'm scrabbling away on my own. So I'm very, very alone, working through problem after problem, and with sort of no big, sort of no interaction. I've said, oh well, let's look at the big picture problem. And now we've got this technology, and it's not in the hands of our kids, simply because no one has bothered or no one knows exactly how to do it. And the technology is a massively advanced Internet of Things, Wi-Fi advanced thing, which measures micrograms, millikelvin, millidegrees, 24 hours a day with no overhead whatsoever, delivers it. It's sort of like what one would imagine in 1,000 years or 100 years to hence what a student would be able to access. And I've gone off, and bear in mind there is no superstructure, no one advising me to do it. I've only had to sort of use my nous to work out what we have to do and how we can do it. So it happens that all throughout the system, we've got this amazing technology just dropping in on us. We've got optical fiber technology, we've got powerful computers sitting at the end of optical fibers, and we just have to get the information onto the optical fiber, through the airways, onto the optical fiber, it goes to the computers, and it's stored. And I'm in this process of getting this up and running, and people have heard on other instances there's concept prototype, research prototype, production prototype. So in the research prototype, you're aiming to get the principles working, and you're not so concerned whether you've got some daggy bits in it. And so this is the in this case, the slow and treacherous workings to moving from a research prototype into a development prototype. Well, the research prototype here, so the value of this is it's picking up data, and at the moment it's scrabbling along at the moment, and it's writing things out in huge reams and reams of plain text. The computers are having no difficulty keeping up with this. Oops, or she was, that's a, well, computers having no difficulties keeping up with this. I'm sort of driving at this point in time, and there's a car. I suppose they love life. They're certainly definitely energetic about it, sort of weaving in and out of traffic. Okay, so The issue here is the value is delivering data to the student of untold accuracy. And I will say, even this first thing, I've seen things I just cannot believe myself. You know, once you turn it up, the world becomes a much more sophisticated, integrated place. I think we're going to build some great scientists. I feel like Donald Trump's fantastic. It's the best, but it is the best coming along. And the process is that in the research prototype, I've basically got the sections working as best as I could, and then I'm slowly evolving from a data rich. So if you can imagine, the worst example is writing things down in your lab book. Now, basically writing your lab book onto the internet. And now in so there's several regimes. There's the programming of the chip. It's got its own programming language. A programming language of the internet, its own programming language, believe it or not. And then the programming language of data manipulation and data control, which is have to be National Instruments LabVIEW going across. And so getting all these to speak to each other is difficult. So you select sort of like a sort of plain English way of doing it. Now, to my absolute shock and horror, so the shock and horror, I just got to really think about it. My shock and horror, PHP, which is the internet language, doesn't take any spaces. Actually, doesn't take strings. You know, if space breaks something up. So that had me completely floored. And when things don't work, you have got no idea the depth of lack of your knowledge of going across. So that's the first thing. And then within the LabVIEW environment, I began to transform the files, start to do things to transform the files into binary files. So if you can imagine, the worst possible thing can be the way that we have the information at the moment. It's sound waves, you know, the amount of bits, megabytes, just to record this. But you want to really condense it down. Now, it's noughts and ones rather than sort of longhand stuff like that. And so within the LabVIEW environment, I said, here's the data, write it to a bit file and an integer, not unsigned integer, 16-bit file. That's the closest, the only thing that they have available. That's really short, really fast algorithms to do that. And lo and behold, your data file, a 300 kilobyte file drops to 30 kilobytes, and your speed, you know, massively increases, because you don't have the it not only reads that, it reads that 30 kilobytes at three times the speed or whatever it is. So, you know, you get a massive speed up. And so what I've had is basically in the LabVIEW environment, it says, when it opens a file, it says, oh, look, I'm reading this file, I'll put a bit file. Once I read it, I'll make it into a bit file. I'll store it as a bit file. The next time I go to read it, I say, is there a bit file? And yes, there is. Well, don't do anything, just use the bit file. Don't even open up this big, long file. And that, of course, has sped the thing up. So for this hours of data, it goes like that for hours, just rips through the hours as it goes through. And now, much to my horror, I can see how slowly I'm working, and I'm looking at my error logs. Look at the error logs and see what I do. A lot of my errors come from me being stupid, making mistakes, and things like that. I tend to interchange letters. So for PHP, a variable, you know, this is stupid as, for a variable, it's always a dollar sign the variable. So I sometimes do a variable and dollar sign at the end. It's taken a little while to pick it up. So you look at your error log file. So what happens is it sometimes does things, the computer in the United States does things under protest, but then it writes a helpful error log. Just seeing that's okay like this. Okay, so we're up to this, and so there is this way, and that given PHP is the most stupid language I've ever come across. You get these things, and essentially at a particular point in your PHP side program, so PHP runs the internet, basically. It runs the internet. And so this program, I've got it to say, you can just say write to a file, and open a file, and a new web page will appear on the internet. You can do hundreds of web pages a second, basically. You know, you can just, so a new page appears, and you can write to this page. And you want to put on that page binary information, not... So I've got it working where it puts the actual plain English language. Now I want to put binary information. And to do that is... it's a simple command. It's called... They've got the words pack. So explode, unexplode. Oh, unexplode, my God. Pack and unpack. So pack means to convert a series of data into binary and just send it off or hold it. And so I've got the data from my device, and I pack it into a variable. So you pack it into the variable, and there's packing instructions. And your packing instructions goes pack bracket inverted commas string symbol, right? How stupid can this possibly be? String symbol and then a series of letters. Now, there's from the manuals, there's a series of letters that you can use, and I'm using S for signed short integer. So a short integer has got two bytes of information, or 16 bits. So there's 8 bits in a byte, and that's going off. And when you do the pack variable 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it all packs it together. Now you can, if you want to, say the number of times it's doing this. I'm just got to really think what I'm doing on this situation. So that's okay. So just basically getting that to do that is just... look, for an average person it would be okay. For me, it's just hell on earth. I've spent an hour, 2 hours getting this up and running before I was able to crack it. And look, a lot of the problems is this interchanging letters, or remembering that it's a backslash for a for a comment. It's two backslashes next to each other for a comment. You know, so what the heck? So if you want to, it's not working, you just comment your code out. Now the error logs that the PHP send are really good. That actually comes back and says, in lines such and such, we were expecting that. So, but it's got to go through the internet. And so that's... up and running. So what happens is that you give it a number, and so you give it 20 numbers. It will convert that into 40 bytes of information. 2 bytes together make a 16-bit number. So there's 8 bits in a byte. So that should be fairly straightforward. And so that indeed goes up to the internet, and just a series of commands, writes it to a file, and there's a bit in writing to a file. It's called fopen and fwrite. Fopen for, I think it's, yeah, and then there's a little letter they have afterwards to say whether you want to append it or write a fresh file. And obviously for data, what the fuck am I doing? So the data logging, I'm appending. So that's all okay. But then you've got these bytes, and of course LabVIEW's got its own system. Not its own system. It's called bigending. So it bigend means it takes the most significant bytes first and the least significant bytes last. So it's sort of like and we do this all the time, you know, how much did you pay for that car? I paid 30k. Well, you actually paid $29,999. So what happens is that the way that numbers go into the internet, the first number, the 999, the first thing that you first receive is the 9 for the $9. Okay, so LabVIEW, it does sort of make sense. It's more the way that we see data. We say, well, feed us the first bit of data first. Now, you can well imagine this, that if you're building robots and systems and you've got an error signal, you don't want to go bum, 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 and at the very end, oh my god, you needed something at the start. So it's called bigending, and there is capacity to tell in the pack system how to get close to LabVIEW, but of course there isn't actually nothing there. There are things, letters which do exist. You got basically a whole alphabet of things, instructions on how to pack information. You know, convert, or packing is called, is breaking it up into bytes, ready to go. So this is packing. Now bear in mind, all these operations are done asynchronously. So the bottom line is, the little device out there, all it does is grab the data and put it on the internet. Now the internet has got all this power and time to actually compute at leisure. You know, massive computing power. And this is the, I suppose, one of the things I've learnt from building robotics factories, in that you just this is going to be painful. I've got to find parkers. Why are the good people of Sydney out here shopping? I mean, it's a beautiful day. Why are you in a shopping centre? So I'll be with you soon, and I'll be able to tell you about this gripping story about getting it through, and I'll probably tell you about how I unpacked it and looked at the bit data. So I'll just go back and say that a bit later. I'll be back in a short while again. So I'm off from this errand, and we're talking about the conversion of the LabVIEW world, the computer side world, and the website world. I'm just making sure I'm not running over people over in this car park. And look, I'll talk about that very soon. A lot of people switch off bits and bytes and stuff like that. So, a bit is a one and a naught. A byte is four groups, four numbers together. It's rather a bit confusing for me, because DNA is codons that are three and slightly different type of data stuff to them. And then the bytes come together to make different words. So you've got a series of bytes to come together to a word. So a byte generally is represented by two hexadecimal letters. So you can have hexadecimal means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 0 to 9, and then A, B, C, D, E. So you've got six additional numbers. So hexadecimal actually has. Hexadecimal has an extra six numbers, which are letters. I know this is hard to go. And essentially, your byte, B-Y-T-E, of eight is represented by two hexadecimal letters. I know, this is so whack. I don't know, this is such a stupid, stupid system. And so your 16-bit is represented by two words of, or two groups of hexadecimal numbers. And, you know, with all these conventions, no wonder it's... and then there's a slight difference between whether you interpret your numbers as... unsigned, that is, or signed, that it can be 0, minus 1, or you know, negative, or stuff like that. And all they do is, for the negative ones, is they say, well, look, we're going to shift our number line down by half. So our number line, say, if you got, say, you could represent all the numbers of 0 to 63, 64 being, you know, the next, you need one more bit to do that. So what we're going to do is going from minus 31. Oh, I don't know how you do this. I'm getting a little bit confused inside my head. Minus 32 to plus 32. So you move one of the bits as a sign bit, which is really the last bit. You know, I don't know how you do it. But the last bit tells you whether you're above or below the number line, which is really your... your last bit to go across. This, you can do the same size, but you can do signed. And so the signed ones are called I, integers, and unsigned ones are called U's. And so LabVIEW likes to use I16. And that's right, I16. That's what I8 is, would be absolutely, you know, what the heck could you use that for? I think I8 maximum is 256. Oh, look, you get sort of the PLC, which costs nothing. Okay, is based on 8-bit architecture. So, essentially, as the computers come along, as improve, you got these archaic things sitting there, and there's a whole lot of mothering you do. It's sort of like baby talk. These little computers speak with baby talk coming out, so it's really depressing them. So basically, your PLC, or your little Internet of Things will speak to the internet, and it really doesn't matter because it's only sending such a small blip of information. It doesn't matter whether it's a blip or blip. Doesn't affect it. Then that side is, for the moment, I've taught it to store that information as binary files. And so this is using 4 bytes of information for a integer. And so 4 bytes is 4 times 8. That's 36 bits coming in. And let's take a little while and it reads it. It's perfectly okay. And you can get it to write the files to it. Now, if you're using that, there's obviously something you have to do at the interface. At that interface is manage the fact that these are integers and that they can't be too big. So for the really too big one, which is the times, the number of, you've got to, now, everything, I don't know what happened in 1904, but 1904 was a crunch year. So we measure in the internet the number of seconds since 1904, and tell you what, there's a fair number. There's more than 16, there's more than 2 to the 32 seconds ish of time. So you need a lot of bits, and a lot of those bits are, you know, are just hang on. Really, all the numbers are pretty staying the same, except the last little number there is flashing away. And so you say, well, you know, this is absolutely pointless, bending over backwards to compress the number of seconds from here. So what I do is I put the time and date, the hour and date in the file name, and then record the number of seconds from the hour turnover. So what that means is you're only storing a time up to 3,600 seconds in an hour. So that's perfectly fine to do. So I can get that bit. But the thing is that there is a subtle difference between how LabVIEW stores I16 and how the internet stores I16. And the way that I did it was that I actually took the number from the internet, then displayed it all as bytes. So what you do is you do number to boolean, which is convert the number to a boolean array, which is okay, display the boolean array, and you see the number coming out of the internet, and it looks fairly sane. And then you type the numbers that you coming out of the internet, and the numbers coming out of LabVIEW. So you write it to LabVIEW the same set of numbers. So I selected 1023. People who know that, that's 10 to the 2 minus 1. A few other ones which should have only really key things. Minus 1, a whole series of zeros, a whole series of 1s. So I could see it, and then I got it to print out the two differences. Now, the thing is that what LabVIEW does is it puts the larger numbers first, but not in a logical, well, I suppose in a logical way, in a sort of semi-logical way. So you've got 16 bits, and say you've got 0 to 16, so you've got bits. What it does is it displays, believe it or not, 17 to 32 first, and then it then displays 1 to 16. And you can sort of see why it does it. And so that's called Bigendian. So where it reverses the words. And so how you do it, how I do it, is you take the number coming from the internet, convert it to bytes. You know, so the words, it knows to, when it's got so many bits, a bit stream of the internet, it's like a sausage thing, it slices it like carrot slicing, slice, slice, slice. And then you take those slices, and then you carefully cut those in two and move the front to the back, and then restitch it together and send it on its way. And that's basically split array at integer 8, and it's really easy to see, and then restitch together, concatenate, and then renumerate. And that's sort of a little base engine that you put to convert, this little base called virtual instrument that you put in front of internet binary files to convert to LabVIEW. Now, the interesting thing is that none of this is written up in love you, help me. It could be written up somewhere really vague. So it's this really simple thing. You take your stream of data from the internet. You take your file from the internet. I've just got to work out how this is done. You take your file from the internet. Yeah, she was. You take your file from the internet, and LabVIEW has this thing of read an internet file and convert it into an array of numbers. And that for array of numbers, you have to then take that number, convert it to bits, and reshuffle it and re-harness it. So there's this key VI which you can stick in LabVIEW, which allows the PLC and the internet to, you know, the server to just go at high speed, and LabVIEW to go at high speed, and we can say goodbye to text, and that's a long way through. Now, I'm just about home. I just went to the shopping centre to buy a bike helmet, which I did, and there was not much choice. It's so crazy. Really, I only had one helmet that I could possibly buy, of one colour, so there was no choice there. Then I'm really short now that I'm losing weight. I've got to get new belts. I went and bought a belt, and the belt cost $3, 24 AA and 24 AAA carbon zinc batteries. It means a lot to me, of course. How much do they cost? $5 each. What the heck? $3 for a belt. Now, this is great. The shopping centre's absolutely full of people, and they're all buying extremely cheap stuff. So the bike helmet really cost basically virtually nothing. I spent nothing and got products there. Now, this is great, but then it's rather bad. It's saying, well, what can I do in life? I definitely can't sell batteries. I definitely cannot manufacture belts, because, you know, people are making a profit selling to me a belt for $3. And, you know, this is quite a reasonable belt. There's nothing wrong with it. And so this is a bit of a wake-up call that people's traditional views of what they can do and how they can operate all changed, because we live in this pretty amazing... I think Australia has had 32 consecutive years of growth. So we've never had a recession. So a lot of people, majority, more than half the population, have never known a recession or any session where Australia has been in negative growth. So it's here, and then now we've got. So the shopping centre was absolutely going off. I couldn't imagine. You couldn't possibly have more people at this shopping centre. You know, there were queues to pay for stuff, and people were just buying ridiculously cheap places. Now, $3 for a belt. Of course, a cup of coffee in Australia, the food is quite expensive, the service is quite expensive, and we're going here, but there, with this very cheap stuff, people have to be smart of putting it together to make it all work. So that's the way to do it, and so this is looking at the whole thing. Now, I suppose the interesting thing here is that I've now got my Internet of Things going, and I have been slowly, each day, each hour, little markers go up in a staircase, and at the end of the day it drops down to zero. So I've got this zigzag, and I've now got about, I think, 14 zigzags. I've been going for 2 weeks since I've got this Internet of Things going, and I can see just how slowly I'm going. As I'm making very methodical progress, but slower than people require. It's really interesting in terms of that I've picked a direction to go in, and I'm going much slower than one would go. I do have things distracting me, and things like I'm not working on on this full time. However, I am going extremely slowly, extremely cautiously. I'm making progress, and you're aware that, you know, other people could go much faster than you. You know, they'd be able to, and I previously could go a lot faster. I can see the awesome errors that I'm making, and of course to avoid the errors, I'm actually going in very small little steps. And I suppose that's something I got free from the basis, just the slow recording of just how slowly I'm learning this new stuff. The interesting thing is that I might have sort of problems, impediments to get it across, but I think I'm going in the right direction, and no one else is. And so it's not that I may have reduced speed, but I've still got a really keen sense of direction, the direction to develop things in. And you know, that's something to me. It's in terms of like, yeah, I have to accept a sort of impairment, but there's all this psychology and culture of impairment where that if you can accept an impairment, you've got to be becoming aware of the concept of impairment and the concept of strategies, the entire concept of beating impairment. And then when you say, and then certain things intrinsic, things that you can change, and then there's impairment of the society as a whole. And so when you're not going where there's when things are not going in the right direction, there's those three areas which you can go. And I would say that the fact that we are steadfastly doing things the way we did a long time ago, and I do think there is an impairment there. Now, the big question for me is that now I've suddenly got, oh, there's other data manipulations to quickly, sort of at the stroke of nothing, compress your data such that it takes an average of 1,024 points. Just a simple process. Now, I'm just mentally thinking. I think it's more. It's compressing more sophisticated than I've actually thought of. I've got the data averaging very well because I average the data and then average the time as well. So if I've got, say, 10 data points at different times, I can add them all together and then take the average time for those data points. So what happens is that a fuzzy graph just shrinks together. So I've been able to look at the smelting of water. It's melting water. I freeze water and I just have it there sitting on. And so I have heat water and see it go down Newton's law of cooling. Freeze it. I see something else going on. I see I have the cup of this cold ice floating at the top. And at the bottom, there's my thermocouple. And instead of this exponential Newton's law of cooling, it goes in a series of basically steps of decreasing gradient. It's this really interesting thing to see to go off. So rather than having a curve, it heats up on a straight line, bends over to another straight line, bends over to another straight line, then bends almost flat. And then when all the ice is gone, it then picks up on an exponential curve. And this is something you only get when you've just got the data sitting there. And I was just mucking around, not expecting to see that much. But that is pretty much, I suppose that's a new discovery. I don't know what I'll call it. It's called I'm just trying to think. It's sort of like a plating, like the sort of panel beating. There's flat, it goes through flat panels. So initially it cools off at a linear straight gradient, and then it bends over to a new linear straight gradient, decreasing linear gradient. So the gradients sort of follow an exponential, but they're all linear in their area. And I'm just repeating that as you go across. So I'm making this progress and also observing it. So I don't know whether I'll publish that. That is, you know, perhaps an unusual effect to see. My theory is that what is happening is that you've got heat entering the surface, and then you've got a process, some sort of convective process of cold water sinking down, and as it heats up, you've got a greater thermal gradient, an inverse thermal gradient. So it's hot. It's hot at the bottom. So that hot thing is now heating up relative. The actual thermal gradient is increasing. So the rate of cooling from the ice above increases. So eventually, what happens is that you've got your thermocouple sitting at a place, and it's a combination of heating and cooling, and that's in a process where it's moving forward. It moves forward, and it slowly goes through these phases. Here, this is sort of a bizarre thing to see, but it is true, and I'll have to write it up and put it across. So the general take-home message is that I am going very, very slowly and making very methodical progress. And it's sort of a wake-up call that it's not just all brain power. It's, I suppose, a bit of attitude and just systematically setting out the problems and knocking them over one by one. It's sort of like knowing how to do a jigsaw puzzle, and you're sort of not as good anymore. However, you've got the basic strategies to go ahead. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll see if I can get this one off.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.